ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Economics.
This is obviously a bit of a personal question, but I do have to ask, have you had a tricky year financially? I know right across the board, 2025, there's been some highs, there's been some lows in the economy, there have been some surprising ones in many places, and we have seen some big tensions in global trade, with tariffs, of course, coming out of the US. When it comes to technology, and we've been talking about it a bit this week, some very euphoric highs on the back of AI, which may or may not be a bubble. We still haven't decided that. At the same time, cost of living crisis is biting. Millions of mortgage holders have been hanging on to every word out of the Reserve Bank around interest rates. So let's take a look back at what we've just had over the last year and maybe one or two predictions for 2026. Dan Ziffer, very nice to have a chat with you. Thanks for having a bit of time for Nightlife.
Lovely to be here, Nick. And as ever, I blame the penguins.
You blame the penguins?
I think the penguins on the uninhabited by human islands of Heard Island, just off, I think off Norfolk, provoked US President Donald Trump because they were taking advantage of the US with all of the exports they were sending there and not paying enough tax. So that's probably what snowballed the year, and I think we should continue to blame them.
I've got to say, if looking back, I mean, that Liberation Day in April, that must have been one of the biggest days this year in terms of your bailiwick and the news coming out from that.
It's really hard to overstate now because it had been mooted, right? So during the election campaign, Donald Trump had talked about putting tariffs on countries. He had, in fact, even earlier, put substantial tariffs on his direct land border neighbours, being Mexico and Canada. He threatened substantial tariffs on China, the world's second largest economy, a key economic player, a lot of interaction between those countries. The rhetoric ramped up until this day in April, where you'll remember the being in the Rose Garden, him holding up these massive posters with all the numbers written down there. It was a really seismic event. I talked to a top chief economist for UBS, big investment house, George Tharano. He was in New York at the time talking to fund managers, talking to other investors, and he just said it felt like the world was falling off a cliff. You know, the oxygen was being sucked out of the room as these global norms, this trading environment that existed since World War II and had largely led to stable economic growth for most countries, was just being shredded in front of our eyes.
Has it maintained that influence? Have we found an equilibrium? Are we still seeing those shockwaves?
We're still seeing shocks, and I think probably that comes from just the instability that was injected into the system as people realised what they already knew, that Donald Trump was highly erratic and would do these substantial interventions into markets to get a result. Now, we haven't seen some of the results that we thought we would. So, for example, the stock market crashed almost straight away. People's projections for the US economy tanked. But we've seen those things recover. You look at US stock markets, they're going to end the year. They've got three key indices anywhere between 14 and 22% higher than they started the year. The US dollar has been devalued. That's kind of a separate story to do with the uncertainty that surrounds the US. People don't trust the dollar as much. They don't trust the independence of the central bank. They don't trust it as a store of value in the same way. But we haven't had the immense impact yet that we thought we would from the imposition of those tariffs. People have found new markets. The Australian economy has kind of chugged along, and we are where we are.
Well, flip it then. Has it paid off for America? I mean, we hear the numbers that come out of the White House come from Donald Trump. Is any of that reflected in what's actually happening to the economy there?
So it has, but with a substantial caveat, which is that the costs are racking up. So when you look at the pass-through of these tariffs, and tariffs are just taxes on trade. Stuff you send to the US, they will tax it before you can then sell it. What's happening is suppliers aren't reducing their cost when they sell stuff. That means that the US importers and essentially US consumers are paying more. So over time, that is building inflationary pressure in the US. That means costs are rising, prices are rising, and we're going into a really tricky political moment where the US has what's called its midterm elections this year. That's where essentially their lower house, our version of the House of Representatives, what they call Congress, is up for election, and about a third of the seats in the Senate, which is their upper house, we also call ours the Senate, they're also up for re-election. What history has shown back to 1950 is that this midterm year in this kind of general four-year presidential cycle, this is the bad one for markets and for the economy in general. From the top to the bottom, the average is about a 17% drop. So if that happens, if you just look at markets, and markets aren't everything, but they're an indicator of the economy, that would wipe out practically all of the insane growth that's happened this year. So tomorrow and next year is a really tricky period for the US as politics and the need to get re-elected intersects with the politics of the economy, where Trump has slapped these tariffs on and maybe reaped a reward from it, but US consumers are feeling increasingly tight. They've got similar cost of living pressures that are increasing because all of the costs of those taxpayers are being borne by people who are taxpayers and voters.
We will talk Australian economy in just a second, but you touched on the devaluation of the American dollar. I mean, that's got to have a major destabilizing influence on economic situations right around the world.
It does. Lots of countries have their dollar tied to the US dollar. Yeah. It's probably more in concept. I remember a few years ago, perhaps after the GFC, which occurred in kind of 2008, 2009, people started signing big deals in euros. That was seen to be the safer currency. But the US has been the default currency of the world. There are lots of countries that don't print their own money. They use US dollars. And so the overall devaluing of the US dollar is a concern for lots of countries beyond the shores of the US.
And of course, as we all know, any economist who specializes in the euro is a urologist. I mean, that's just the way words work. When we talk locally, obviously we are still in Australia talking so much about cost of living, and it's all been very much tied in with what's been happening with interest rates and inflation. Where have we found ourselves at the, you know, when we got to the end of 2025?
Well, we're not where we thought we'd be at the start. So at the start of this year, the Reserve Bank had held interest rates static for more than a year. And we went through the January meeting, we got to the February meeting, there was this incredible tension. Consumer spending had collapsed. People were so stretched because one third of Australian households are paying off their housing, a further third rent, many of those dwellings subject to mortgages. And so the repayments of them were really high because you've got these very big numbers having a substantial interest rate applied to them. So when that cut finally came, when we'd done the hard work of reducing inflation, there was massive relief. Now, there were two more cuts. Again, very cautious. There was a hold, then a cut, then a hold, then a cut. And we thought that we're probably going to get one or two more in the back half of the year. But in September, we got a real shock where inflation again ticked higher, well beyond the 2 to 3% target range where the Reserve Bank wants to see prices rising. Now, this doesn't mean that they want to see prices fall. They just want to slow the growth of price rises to between 2 and 3% a year. They want things going up by essentially 2.5% every year. In September, we got that shock where, again, it was at 3.8, driven by a lot of things that are far beyond the control of the Reserve Bank, far beyond the control of ordinary consumers, such as our messy but necessary and expensive transition to greener energy, and also the impact of extreme weather and climate change, which is impacting insurance premiums and things like that. These things we can't do much about, but they're a substantial factor in inflation. So we saw that go higher, and those two more interest rate cuts that we thought we were going to get, that Australian households were really waiting on, have probably disappeared into the ether. You look at what the Reserve Bank is saying, and they've basically shot that off. Increasingly, economists think that the more likely thing that will happen now is a period where we hold rates steady or even start to lift them into the new year to control inflation?
I mean, rate rises were obviously the big focus for so long, and many people, you know, in your industry were saying the RBA only has one tool and it's a hammer, but sometimes there could be a bit more nuance to what they can do.
There's lots of things that we could do to control inflation. None of them are easy. All of them are politically explosive and very difficult, okay? Because essentially what you're trying to do is you're trying to take money out of the economy, okay? That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to have less money, less heat in the economy so that demand and supply meet up. The government could, for example, increase the Medicare levy for a brief period, which would go across everyone, including the one-third of people who are largely older, incredibly wealthier. This is all on average, and absolutely shooting the lights out at the moment when it comes to living standards, would hit them as well. We could, for example, briefly increase superannuation payments. We could take money out of people's wages, quarantine it, give it to them decades from now in increased superannuation payments and thus investments and returns. Instead, what we've chosen to do, which is politically expedient because it's easy to have someone to say, well, aren't these guys mean, is we have an independent central bank that has one big lever that essentially whacks hard the one-third of Australians who have housing debt, who tend to also be in a similar kind of age range, kind of family formation between kind of 20s and 55, hit them really hard in the amount of money that they have available to live their life while sparing largely an older cohort who have hoarded wealth over time and have substantial assets, all of which are boosted by these increased interest rates.
Ziff, before we go, let's talk AI and let's put the technology to one side and talk about the economics. I mean, NVIDIA at one point was a $5 trillion company. Countries would never get near that. Is it a bubble? Is it a house of cards? What happens if it does pop?
It's probably the biggest question of 2026 is what will happen. You have these companies who are all building out and spending so much money in a frenzy at the same time that essentially their spending commitments for 2026 have put a floor under US GDP. US gross domestic product will be a certain level because they are spending next year more than $500 billion on things like factories and technology and data centers. The thing I kept coming back to is they can't all win. So it doesn't mean that all of this is wasted effort, you know, in the same way as it was really great when people build railroads everywhere in the late 1800s. Didn't work out for every single country, but for every single company involved, but they left a substantial network that connected cities and countries. What's going to be left from this? I don't know. Is it a bubble? I can't say. Lots of people are using that word. It certainly is an immense amount of money, with the caveat that at the moment they are actually making profits. It's different to the dot-com boom we saw in the kind of late 90s, early 2000s. We had a lot of companies at extremely high valuations with great potential, but they didn't actually make any money. A lot of these companies are making money. Is it enough to justify the amount they're spending? Will they make it back?
I was hoping we were going to end and you were going to say 2026, so rosy, the outlook's lovely, everyone have a good time. It's going to be another tumultuous year, isn't it?
It's likely, as ever, these things are really affected by events that we have no knowledge of yet. You know, it's great to have the chat, but, you know, it could be that there's some collapse in the world honey market that takes our attention in 2026. We just don't know, Nick. So I hope that doesn't happen, but who knows? I certainly wish people all the best for a safe and prosperous year full of light, but I can provide no guarantees.
Kicking myself for putting all of my money into hives. Why would you say that? No, Ziff, it's fantastic. Thanks for having time for Nightlife.
All the best.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.